I was preaching in a coastal town. I was staying in a motel on the coast. Just outside my window was the ocean. I had just counseled with a fella in a morning after a morning service who said to me, "Brother Hiles, I've just had one failure after another." Are you listening? One failure after another. I tried to help him, but somehow couldn't get through to him. And after I'd counseled with him and come back to my room, I was sitting and watching the ocean. And then, before I left, I made it a point when the tide came in to watch the tide come in. And as I was watching the tide come in, a small wave came toward the shore. It fell back in failure. Another wave came, as if to try to explore the beach, and stretched out. And though it got a little closer, it also fell back in failure. Another after another after another after another little wave came and failed. And yet the great bosom of the sea kept moving shoreward. Each little wave was failing, but it was a part of a great move of success. And I saw that. And I thought about the fellow who had said to me a while before. I thought about him saying, one failure after another. And all of a sudden it dawned on me, the entire coming of the tide is caused by one failure after another. Each wave coming a little closer than the one before and failing. And then the next one a little closer than the one before and failing. Until the great bosom of the sea came in, and all the waves and the ocean came in successfully. And I thought, now that's that fella. While I was there, I turned on television set. I turned on ESPN, the sports station. And I turned on, they said, "We are going to have a special program on the world's greatest athlete." Well, good night. I did not even know that they had known. But they said we're going to have a program on the world's greatest athlete. And boy, I said, I've got to see this. So, first thing they had was this world's greatest athlete was running a mile run. And he came in third. I thought, what's the hot about him? World's greatest athlete. Two guys greater than him, he came in third. Then they said, we're going to play back now the high hurdles. And he ran the high hurdles. And he came in third again. I said, what's this? World's greatest athlete. Hasn't won a race yet. Then they had the pole vault. And he came in second. You know, of all the things that they showed to him doing, he didn't win a single race. You know what it was? Somebody tell me what it was. The what? Decathlon. The decathlon. 10 different sporting achievements and contests. And you get so many points for first and so many points for second. And so many points for third. Now, I don't know how many of those I saw. I'm sure I saw 5 of them. And this fella failed every time. He came in second. He came in third. He came in third. He came in second. He came in fourth. But he was the world's greatest athlete. Why? The guy had failed every time I saw, every playback I saw, he had failed on it. But he came in. Then I thought, the greatest football player I ever saw was Doak Walker. Doak Walker played for SMU, Southern Methodist University, in the late 1940s, before I was born. Brother Colston told me about him. But he, Doak Walker. And I got thinking about this great football player. Doak Walker, now get this, in this day as a specialist, Doak Walker was the leading runner on the team. He was the leading passer on the team. He was the leading punter on the team. He was the leading pass interceptor as safety man on defense on the team. He kicked the field goals. He kicked the extra points. He ran back the kickoffs. He ran back the punts. And one year he was a leading tackler on the team playing defensive safety. Now, on the truth is, Doak Walker was not the best runner in America. By the way, he won the Heisman trophies, being the outstanding football player in the nation, and the next year was going to win it, but he was hurt some and wrote them and asked him not to consider him. By the way, something else too. Oh, I'm going to all that. But anyway, you get as old as I am, you got so many things in your memory, you just want to talk all the time. And in hopes that some folks will get some of it. But anyway, now Doak Walker, he was not in the top 10 passers in America. He was not in the top 10 runners in America. He was not in the top 10 kickers in America. He was not in the top 10 tacklers in America. But he was the best football player in America. Why? Because though he did not win at anything, he won at everything. Now, I was watching this ESPN. A gymnast came on. Now, to me, that is the hardest thing to comprehend, these gymnasts. I mean, they do all those flip-flops and end up on their feet. That's impossible to me, I tell you. And I was watching this guy, and he had these rings up there, and he pulled himself up, and around he went, and then he had the bars up there, not the kind of bars you go to, but he had the bars up there, and the parallel bars, and it's amazing. I mean, the guy had muscles like mine, and it was amazing. And then that one bar that they walk out on like this, and things about that wide, and they do flips there and land on that bar. And this fellow won. And after it's over, they interviewed him. And they asked him, how many times did you fall off that bar before you learned to stay on it when you do a, what they call a flip, flop? I did it as a flop, but a flip. How many times did you miss that bar? And that gymnast, who was the world's champion, said, thousands of times. Thousands of times. Thousands of times he had failed. But each failure was like the waves coming in with the tide, a little closer, and then fail, and a little closer, and then fail, and a little closer, and then fail. So in a case like that, failure is succeeding in getting a little closer to success. Oh, I wonder how many people have washed out because they didn't stay just a little longer. I wonder how many folks haven't made it because they quit just a little too soon. So I grabbed the telephone and I called this fella. And I said, hey, fella, I found your answer. He said, what is it? I said, just keep on failing. Just keep on failing. If you've got the right purpose, you're on the way to success. I told him about the waves. I said, I've sat here and watched dozens of waves fail and fall, trying to get to the shore. But they were only a part of a great movement called the tide. And though they failed, they're a part of machinery that was successful. And in the success of the coming of the tide, a part of the success was the failure of each wave. I know a college student, Matthias Anderson College. As far as I know, never one semester succeeded in earning a semester's credits. I doubt if the guy ever got over 8 credits a semester. But he graduated. He failed and 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 graduated. That's encouraging, isn't it? You've heard me say this. That's the way I learned to ride a bicycle. My daddy worked at the Argyle Apartments in Dallas, Texas. I was 6 years old. Somebody had thrown a bicycle away in the garbage can behind these rich apartments, and my daddy went to the owner and asked him to have the old bicycle that was thrown away and it's apart. Everything dismantled. And he got that old bicycle and put it back together, and I got it for Christmas, 1900 and bleep, bleep. It's 1932. I was 6 years old. We lived on a hill on Ann Arbor Street, 1600 block. I got that bicycle at the top of that hill, and down at the bottom of that hill was a bridge just past Fernwood. A bridge, a little creek and a bridge across that creek. I got on that bicycle, and I started down the hill. Didn't get too far up the hill first. And I landed in the creek on the right side of the bridge. I got back up, pulled the bicycle out, shook water off me and off the bicycle, took it back up, a little ways up the hill. And I said, I know what I did wrong. I had my hands turned, the handlebars turned too much this way. That's why I landed on the right side of the bridge in the creek. So I corrected it and landed on the left side of the bridge in the creek the next time. Now, as you've heard me say before, my biographical review of that day is this. I failed and I failed. And I failed and I failed and I failed and I failed. And I failed and I failed and I failed and I failed and I failed. And I failed 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 and I failed. And I failed 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 and I failed. And I failed and 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 learned how to ride a bicycle. And everybody in this room learned how to ride a bicycle exactly like I did. And I'm saying, I got a little closer every time, and the wave came in and failed, but the wave wasn't by itself. It was a part of a great movement. There was a tide coming in, and as the tide came in, my failure was a part of the success of the tide. Did you ever stop and think that Pete Rose has failed 7 out of every 10 times he's ever batted? Seven out of ten. I've asked this morning Joe Elwell to help me. I asked him to sit on the front. And I wanted to use an illustration. He doesn't know this, but he's going to come up and stand beside me. Joe, would you come up a minute? I want to. He's not a part of the bass section, is he? Joe, I want to brag on Joe. Because he got out of the bass section of the choir. I want to tell you something. Joe Elwell finished college in January. You know when he started? The day Hiles Anderson College opened its doors in 1972. That's when he started. Now, wait a minute. Joe Elwell was, at that time, fat. Pudgy and mischievous. He broke more rules the first year in school than we had. In fact, the committee met and said, Joe, you can't come back next semester. And Joe was out. We made new rules just for Joe. Fourteen years. And listen, there's no way known how to fail, this guy didn't do. There's no way for you to know all the troubles he's been through. He's probably taken more pastoring than most anybody in this room this morning. But Joe's not a quitter. And Joe said, I'm a little closer than I was. And every semester he's about 1 hour closer than he was before. You heard the story of the turtle and the rabbit. Here's old Tortoise himself right here. Folks have come to Hal Sanderson, married, reared their children, married their children off. Old Joe was still taking freshman English. But he stayed. I could have, boy, listen. Of all the people ever graduated from Hal Sanderson College, I don't believe I'm going to ever enjoy giving a degree like I'm going to enjoy when I give old Joel Elway his degree. How many times he's been in my office? I don't know. And the different kinds of problems he's had? I don't even know. He's had so many problems, he didn't even worry about the little ones. Over and over again, he got knocked down, but he got back up. He got knocked down, but he got back up. He failed, but he got back up. He failed, but he got back up. But every wave that came in and failed was a little closer to the shore. And the tide came in last January. 14 years. Now I won't tell you what he succeeded in. He succeeded in learning how to get back up. It looked like failure, but it was succeeding in learning how to get back up. It looked like failure, but it was succeeding in learning patience. It looked like failure, but it was succeeding in learning perseverance. It looked like failure, but it was succeeding in learning how to be gracious in failure. It looked like failure, but he was succeeding in wanting to win. And trying to win. And in failing, he got a little bit closer every time. And there's not one example in this church, and especially in our college, that can compare to this fellow right here. 14 years ago this July, he moved to Hammond to get his degree. And he's been kicked down, and he's kicked others down. He's fallen down, run down, slipped down, stumbled down, tripped down, but he always got back up. Folks, let me tell you something. None of us has gone through life without failing. But like the tide that comes in, the failing multitudes of waves are all a part of a great work of the great sea that's rolling toward the shore. And in next month, I'm going to hand the degree to Joe Elwell, because Joe Elwell found that failure is succeeding in getting a little closer to success. God bless you, Joe. Thank you very much. I'm proud of you. Now, many a sorrow came his way. But you know what sorrow is? Sorrow is the machine on which joy is tested to see if it's real or not. You can't have joy when sorrow comes. It wasn't real joy. What is sorrow? Sorrow is the machine on which real friendship is tested. What is sorrow? Sorrow is the machine on which real grace is tested. The first year of my ministry, I failed every Sunday. I mean, every Sunday. The first sermon I ever preached, as you know, lasted 3 minutes. I sat down and cried because I could not continue. And I tried for a year and never had one convert. But every time I stood to preach, though I failed, I got a little closer to success. And I'd preach again the next Sunday and fail, but a little closer to success. And then I'd preach the next Sunday, and though I fail, I got a little closer to success. I remember that first sermon I preached, Cedar Temple Baptist Church in Dallas, Texas, and sat down in failure after 3 minutes, stuttering and stammering. A fellow walked by, and only one fellow came by to shake my hand. He looked down. He said, "Son, you better not go through with this preaching business. You'll never make it." I went to my room that night. I got on my knees, and I said, "Dear God, I know as sure as I know that I'm saved that you call me to preach. I know that. And dear God, I didn't do very well. But if you'll make a preacher out of me, I'll promise you, I'll never preach a sermon without going alone somewhere and remembering tonight. I could count on the fingers of these two hands out of 43,000, almost 43,500 sermons, the times that I have not gone alone after the service and remembered that first night. Sunday after Sunday, morning and night, Wednesday night, always go to my office, always shut the door. People in line there waiting to see me. What are you doing there, Brother Hyles? First thing I do, get on my knees behind the desk and remember how it was at first. Failed and failed and failed and failed and failed. Get up! You're on your way to success. I have a little sermon I used to preach some, and don't preach it anymore much. Rarely ever, if ever. Called it, "You Can Fail and Not Be a Failure." I preached it in Normal, Illinois. Fellow heard it. He was worth $3 million, he said. Successful businessman. Made it all himself. Didn't inherit a penny of it. All of it he earned himself. I preached the same sermon at Bill Rice Ranch a few years later. Fellow was there. He said, "Dr. Hyles, I want to thank you." By the way, after preaching the same sermon he heard in Norman, Illinois, he said, "I want to thank you for the sermon. Oh, and you can fail and not be a failure." And I said, "Thank you." He said, "Brother Hyles, that sermon saved my neck." He said, "Shortly after you preached that sermon on 'You Can Fail, Not Be a Failure,' he said, in 1 week, I lost every penny of my estate. I went from having a $3 million net worth to not having one red cent net worth." And he said, "When I lost it all, the first thing I thought about was that sermon. You can fail and not be a failure. You can fail and not be a failure." Ladies and gentlemen, there's no way any of us is ever going to escape failing, but blessed be God, none of us has to be a failure. And he grinned and he said, "I lost it all, but," he said, "I'm making it back." I said, "How?" He said, "I thought about that sermon," and he said, "I lost $3 million in a week, so I got me a speech. How to lose $3 million in 7 days." He said, "I made that speech," and he said, "they paid me well for it. Now I'm doing nothing but traveling across America making that speech at conventions on how to lose $3 million in 7 days. He said, "I about made it back." I was in Fort Worth, Texas, preaching last summer. Saw the fellow again. He's down in Fort Worth now, doing well. Why? Because one little thought one night in a sermon in Norman, Illinois, gripped him. You don't have to be a failure because you fail. The truth is that failing is often a part of a general program of success. I wonder how many times the choir practiced that number they sang this morning. I wonder how many times Brother Boardway said, "Bass section, you're off. Off." And they tried it again. And Brother Boardway said, "Bass section, you're off." And Brother Boardway said, "Bass section, you're off." And then they finally succeeded, as you saw this morning, by asking the bass section not to move their mouths at all during the special. I wonder how many nights Mrs. Colston and Mrs. Godfrey drove their parents wacky while they were taking piano and organ lessons. I can recall many a night going out in the garage and studying while Becky was practicing piano. And I can't tell you. But sit there in those dumb recitals, I'd rather go through the first half of the Great Tribulation period. Sit there in those dumb recitals, and the teacher come out and say, her name was Miss Hill, wasn't it? Miss Hill, she said, and now Miss Becky Jan Hiles will give a recital on numbers by Beethoven, Bach, and Mozart. By the time Becky chopped up Beethoven, Bach, and Mozart, Beethoven considered pressing charges. Mozart had his ears stopped up. Bach was considering suicide. And I'd sit there proud of little Becky. Failed. But it was all a part of a great program of success. That's all. She wasn't failing because every time she played Bach, she got closer to where she was going. Every time Mrs. Colston practiced on the organ as a child, she got closer to the offertory this morning. It was not failure. It was succeeding in getting a little closer to success. I say success is just a little farther down the same road that leads to failure. Did you ever get a car? Did you get stuck in the mud with a car? You go, and every time you failed to get out of the rut, didn't you? But every time, you wouldn't have kept doing it, except every time you got a little closer, and 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 then you fell in the ditch. But you, a little closer. And then finally, you got out. And that's what it's all about. Jesus said to his disciples, he said, fellas, he said, you've been with me now, and in hours of agony, in hours of defeat, seeming defeat, and seeming failure, but he said, you stuck with me. He said, all of that is a part of a great program that's going to enter someday, give you a place in the kingdom to reign with me in the kingdom. Oh, if I could get you this morning to stop and realize, just get up. Just get up. Every man on this platform, every one, has failed. I could guarantee, I could tell you story after story after story about all of them. How that they came to a place in their lives, some of them where it looked like they couldn't make it. But they failed again, but got closer to success. And failed again. And got closer to success. And failed again. But got closer to success. Don't give up. Don't turn back. Success has failure as a part of its recipe. Just a little farther down the road from failure. I told you this in the sermon on You Fail Not Be a Failure. I love this. One Sunday, a woman in New York City jumped out of the 89th floor of the Empire State Building. Actually jumped out, suicide. And as she jumped out, a gust of wind got her and pushed her back toward the wall, and she landed on a little ridge about that wide on the 87th floor. If she'd have jumped and tried to hit it, she wouldn't have hit it. And the funny thing about it, she was injured but not killed. They took her to the hospital. I got to New York City to preach on Monday. Picked up the newspaper, and an interview was in the newspaper with this lady. And they asked her, why did you try to kill yourself? And she said, because I have failed at everything in life I've ever tried to do. And I laughed, and I laughed, and I laughed, and I laughed. Boy, when you can't kid yourself, you're a flop. That's all there is to it. All the way to the end. I mean, it's like a guy pointing a gun to his head and missing. I failed in everything I ever tried to do. May I tell you this morning, A word of testimony and I'll be finished. I didn't come at this thing like some fellows do. I wasn't the kid in the church that everybody thought would be a preacher. I wasn't the fair-haired boy in the church that everybody thought someday would pastor a great church. I was a kid in the corner with his thumb in his mouth, with a dad who was an alcoholic and a mother who was so poor we could hardly eat. When I surrendered to preach, my pastor almost didn't tell the people because he's ashamed to tell them. I used to wonder why God put me on the scene. I was preaching one night in Kansas City, Missouri at a great nationwide convention it's been about 15 years ago. On that program, Dr. Bob Jones Sr. was living then. Dr. Bob Jones Sr., Dr. Bob Jones Jr., Dr. Bob Jones III, Dr. John Rice, Dr. Bill Rice, Dr. G.B. Vick, and looked like a Hall of Fame of great preachers. And it said, final message, Dr. Jack Hyles. And I looked at that program as I was sitting on the platform about to preach and close that thing out, and I thought, now what in the world am I doing up here? And I wondered for years why God put me with the big preachers. One day I was sitting in the parking lot of Bob Jones University. I'd spoken on chapel, was going to go eat in the dining hall. Dr. Bob Jones Jr., I'm sorry, Bob Jones III, who's now president of the university, he drove me to the dining hall, 3 or 4 block drive. Before he got out of the car, I started to get out. He said, hold it, Dr. Hiles. He said, wait a minute. And tears began to roll down his cheeks. And Dr. Bob III, who's now president of the university, he said, Dr. Hiles, I envy you. And I said, why do you envy me? He said, the fact that your dad was an alcoholic. I said, what are you talking about? He said, Dr. Hiles, from the time I was born, everybody expected me to be something. My whole future was charted for me when I was born. Everybody knew someday I'd be president of Bob Jones University, just in the family. And he said, whatever I do, it won't ever surprise anybody. He said, sometimes I wish my daddy was an alcoholic, been an alcoholic, and nobody expected a thing out of me. And I said, Brother Bob, by the way, he was just a young man then, still in college. And I said, Brother Bob, that's exactly the way it was with me. I never said this. I've never said it in public. But I was such a little runt. I wanted something that I could do to make people think I could succeed at something. When I got drafted and passed the physical, the church members couldn't believe it. And that's why I became a paratrooper. I saw my opportunity to let folks know that I was somebody. And God knows I was the least likely guy in the training to pass it. We had 1,100 men start off the training of paratroopers, and 309 got their wings. But I was going to get mine. I was going to do it. First day of training, we had to run a mile. Second day, 2 miles. Third day, 3 miles. Until the last 10th day, 10 miles, then 10 miles a day, without stopping, no breaks, just running. With boots on, up and down highway, hills. But I was sick that morning, had 102, 103 fever. I ran and I ran, and I thought I couldn't run anymore, but I had to be a paratrooper. I had to do it. And I passed out about 100 feet or so from the finish line. And I was awakened by the way, I was vomiting. I vomited on the whole run. And then I fell down face down in my own vomit, unconscious. I was awakened by a sergeant who said, "Soldier, in this outfit, when you quit running, we crawl." And I got on my hands and knees and crawling in my own vomit, I crawled to the finish line. I want to finish. I want to finish. When I got my wings, I went back home to my church.
Little old Jackie boy Hyatt. Paratroop wing. Nobody else in the church is a paratrooper except me. I strutted down the aisle of Hillcrest Baptist Church. Those wings looked like they were a yard wide. In fact, they were a little wider than my shoulder. Now, I'll never forget one of the girls in our church, Peggy Render. I used to go with her when I was a kid. Peggy Render, she's a loud-mouth kind of a girl. She walked up and she called me Hiles. Hiles! Whose uniform did you borrow? I said, "Come on, Peg. Mine." "Whose wings did you borrow? Mine." She said, "Hiles? A paratrooper?" I said, "Yeah, baby. Eat your heart out." Oh, listen to me. Jesus said, "It's been tough, fellas. It's been awful tough." He said, "You've been spit at and hated, chased out of town. And you said, it looked like night after night and night after night we weren't going to make it. But he said, you stuck it out. And he said, I got a place in the kingdom for you, even as my Father has a place for me." Hang in there. Just hang in there, little widow. You don't know how and where you're going to get those kids through school. Just hang in there. Hang in there, little Hiles Anderson College lady. Well, how are you going to pay the bill when it comes due next time? Hang in there! Hang in there, couple. Hundreds of miles from home. Don't know how you're going to make it and trying to get you out. Hang in there! Hang in there, cancer patient. Just hang in there. Just hang in there. Cause failure is succeeding in getting a little bit closer to success. Our Heavenly Father